Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello and welcome to the Motormouth podcast with me, Tim Sylvie, and Tomo F1, who's standing in for Harry Benjamin while he's out on commentary duties. This is the place where we meet a figure from the world of motorsport and dive into their lives and careers, often uncovering truths you never knew existed. We've sat down with Formula One drivers, team principals, touring car stars, Le Mans and IndyCar winners, famous broadcasters, content creators and pioneers, all to make sure that you get behind the visor and hear from the world's biggest and most interesting names. If there's anyone with a story to tell, they usually tell it right here. Check us out at motormouth.club, download our app, check out our regular Motormouth kart race where you can race alongside the stars and support our partners at Movember and the Brain Tumor Charity. And don't forget, please subscribe to our show, leave a review, it really makes a difference. Find us on all the major podcast channels. In the meantime, sit back, relax, and enjoy the chat. Hello everyone, Tim Sylvie here. Now, before we get into it, first, Tomo, Tom McCluskey, Tomo F1, welcome to the show, your debut on the Motormouth podcast. From a hosting perspective, how are you?
All of the above, yes. I'm here to deputise. I've not quite got the silky smooth tones of Harry Benjamin, but I will do my best, okay? It's a pleasure to be here, mate. Thank you for having me.
Oh, well, thank you for joining us. And I guess you'll be here for a few weeks because Harry's off gallivanting around the world doing his commentary bits and bobs. So you'll be here for a little while.
No, he's big time now, Tim. He's big time, mate. You got to keep a leash on it.
Remember where you started, Harry Benjamin. Remember the small people. Now then, back to business. So today's guest hails from Avignon in France. So in honour of that, Tom, I thought I'd test you with a couple of Avignon-related questions. Now, you're a well-travelled chap, so I'm expecting a good success rate here.
It's my specialist subject, Tim.
Here we go. Number one, what well-known river does Avignon reside by?
The River Avignon.
I see what you've done there, but that's incorrect.
Trick question. Damn it.
one more go.
Okay. What well-known?
You'd
to be honest, well-known rivers in France. I'm hitting a bit of a blank here. I'm not going to lie. I'm going to say. Because I think I know what part of France Avignon's in.
I wouldn't know. It's south, isn't it? Is it south?
I thought it was north. Well, today's guest is the perfect person to clear this up later on. I'm just going to say the river Le Castellet.
Le Castellet. It's a good effort. It's the Rhone. The Rhone River. I guess as in Côte de Rhone, as in, well, I don't know. Anyway, that was mean. I'm not going to give you another Avignon-related question. I'm going to give you a motorsport-related question that is related to France, okay? Who was the last Frenchman to win the Formula One World Championship, and when did he do it?
Okay, so I'm just trying to think of anyone other than Alain Prost who won the world championship. Well, Alain won it in the Williams in 93. So I'm going to say Alain Prost, 93.
Yeah.
Super. Oh, baby.
Well done.
That's it. That is Come on. Who needs okay. Benjamin, mate?
Okay.
Come on.
Okay, good. But how many times did he win it?
He won it. Well, if it's a different point scoring system, he'd have won it a lot more than he did. He won it 3 times.
4 times. He won it 85, 86, 89, had that gap.
I always forget about 85.
And then won again for the last time in 1993. Although there's been French Grand Prix winners since then, no one who's actually won the championship. So it's probably about time they did. With that in mind, shall I introduce today's guest? Just before we get into that, bear with me for 2 minutes. I must tell you about our new sponsors of the show. And it's one that means a great deal to us all on a very personal level here at the Motormouth podcast. In 2021, Dana, the founder of Motus One, passed away suddenly and without warning whilst visiting family in the States. Dana was one of my very best friends. The legacy he left with his family and his business is incredible, and I'm hugely humbled and proud to have his booming business as part of this show. Sponsors are vital for our survival, and make sure we continue to bring you interviews with the biggest names in racing. So if you or your company needs event transportation, look no further than the team at Motus One. They have you covered anywhere in the world, from a single chauffeur-driven sedan to a fleet of luxury SUVs, Teslas or motor coaches. Find your transportation solution with Motus One. They've got offices worldwide, including the Middle East, Europe and Africa, and will support your transportation needs regardless of location. Motus One is committed to world-class service at the very best rates to ensure your event goes off without a hitch. Contact them at motusone.com. We'll put all their social links in the podcast description. A massive, massive thanks to Dana, his wife Claudia, his kids, the rest of the Motus One team. Thank you for having faith in our show and joining us for season 12. Right, back to it. On with the show.
I think that's a good idea, Tim.
So today we're joined by Clem Novalak. He started in karts before progressing through junior motorsport with British F3, full-blown FIA F3, and into Formula 2. He's a championship winner, multiple podium placer and race winner, and we're here to dive into his life, career, thoughts and opinions. Clem, a big warm welcome to the Motormouth podcast.
Thank you for having me, guys.
Clem, where are you today? What's the background's not giving much away, mate.
I am currently in my bedroom. As you can tell, it's 9:30 in the morning, so I did wake up not long ago, being a racing driver, of course. So we're just in the UK at the moment, getting a few days rest before having some sort of holiday, as it's the beginning of the summer break.
Yes.
And then right back into racing.
Your English is insanely good. How long have you lived in the UK?
So it's not actually down to just living in the UK. I went to British school ever since I was like 8. So I kind of am a French sort of Brit, if you could call it that.
I was reading an interview actually. Do you consider yourself to be like European? Because obviously I know there's French, there's a bit of Swiss as well and British. So yeah, what kind of feels most home to you? Would you say that is the UK?
I'll put it this way. I have my family has a house here. So definitely when I'm away racing, I really want to come back to the UK at some point. But I don't know. I have a feeling that whenever I go down to Paul Ricard, being born only like 40 minutes away, it's probably where I feel the most at home. But still, I mean, I love the UK.
That's handy having a house here. So you're surrounded by family. You're not here on your own, just, you know, peddling your wares without anyone around you.
At the moment I am, because they're all on holiday when I decided to stop traveling, if you know what I mean, and just take a few days at home. But I have my whole family around me, which is really nice.
Very nice. Now let's take it right back to the start, which is what we always like to do here on the show. When did the racing bug first bite for you? When did it first come on your radar?
So back in early 2000s, I used to watch a lot of the F1 Grand Prix with my dad. So we sort of had this thing where every Sunday was sort of a ritual. We used to just sit down in front of the telly after lunch, enjoy our meal, and then watch the F1. Obviously, at the time, I can't really remember who was winning. I reckon it was probably Fernando or someone like that, because it was early 2000s, mid-2000s. And then I sort of asked him, look, I want to do something. I want to go karting somewhere. So we just sort of started from there, did a couple of rental kart sessions, like anybody does, I guess. And it sort of caught on. And then I was like, look, I want to do this a bit more. I want to start racing. And I guess, I don't know if my dad really enjoyed it, because he always told me, look, racing is a very difficult sport. So when I told him I want to race, he was probably thinking, God, that's going to cost a lot of money. And yeah, so I guess, I don't know if he was extremely happy at the beginning about it, but I guess we had a pretty cool run together, which was nice. And at least we shared a passion, which I think if you compare it to my brothers, I ended up sharing a lot more memories with him because of the fact that I was away so often on track with him, which is something that got us very close.
So did any of your brothers have the bug as well? Were they interested in racing at all? Was it just you?
They wanted to, but we sort of had this thing in the family where I guess they didn't want to interfere on what the others were doing. So like, for example, if my brother started playing drums, if I then started playing drums, he'd get really angry at me because he'd be like, that wasn't my thing. So I think they sort of respected the fact that I was racing. Probably the last one wants to do a couple of test days at some point in a kart, so I'll try and coach him through
that. Well, we've got the Motormouth kart race 1st of September. Bring him down to that. Let's test his
mettle. That'd be good.
Now, talking of karting, you obviously went through the karting route, as most drivers do. We've had one or two drivers on the show who actually either skipped karting or started really, really late. Do you think that it's imperative, like that's a stepping stone that you need to take as a driver to make it in the sport?
Not necessarily. I think that one of the things it brings the most, I mean, gives the driver the most, is probably the racecraft. Because in the end, once you step into cars, it's so different that, yes, you do remember, you know, breaking points and so on, and it does teach you stuff. But I think that the key is the racecraft, because you're so close. There's so many moves happening. It's so hectic in a race that the moment you sort of step into cars, you don't have that many opportunities with, obviously, like if we're talking single seaters with the aero wash and everything, when the move is there for the taking, you have to sort of send it, if you know what I mean. Otherwise, you might not get that opportunity later down the road. And I think that's where karting sort of helps, because in the end, you just nail it.
Mm. Do you think also, like, being the age that you are, and even the age I am, because I'm touching 30 now. But even for me, like growing up, video games were a huge part, and obviously now sim racing and that. You know, do you consider sim racing and being able to have a setup at home and replicate that? Do you think that's do you think going forward that's going to be quite a significant component of almost training going forward? Nothing replicates the real thing, but do you think that has a place? I guess.
I mean, for sure. I keep haggling my engineers about the fact that I have to travel to the Netherlands to do my sim stuff when I've got sort of a setup at home, and I'm like, can you just not send me the software and I can do it at home instead of having to travel all the way there every time? But no, for sure, like in the end, it plays a big part already in our lives as professionals. Like, we have to be there before every weekend, which is a bit of a ball ache sometimes, but you know, I guess that's part of the job. But yeah, no, in general, I think that even starting out, there's a few drivers that actually did very well coming in from just a sim racing background. So it definitely has its use.
Do you think, because like some of the drivers that you're probably referencing there is people like Jan Mardenborough, who I think did it in 2011. He was like the original bedroom to racetrack racer. Do you think, in a way, is that kind of thing good for the sport? Does it make it look a bit like, oh, I can just do this in my bedroom, and I can go, if I'm good at it, I can go on track and race cars for real? I mean, does it correlate, or was it with him, he just happened to have a lot of actual racing talent as well?
I think it really depends, because the thing that sim drivers have that might end up making them really, really good is the fact that they can repeat everything over and over again. Like, when you put our lives into perspective, the higher up you go, the less testing you get. In Formula 2, in Formula 3, you get 6 days before the season starts. So in the end, you're sort of there going, okay, I'm getting ready, and oh shit, it's already happening. And you sort of have to get in and be really quick to learn. And I guess that's something sim drivers don't have. But I think when it comes to the real thing, once they step into the real car, it being different, it it's still a challenge because they also still have that little time to learn the things. So, I mean, I think there's it plays a part in the sense that they've got a lot of training. They're probably hardwired to brake at the same place every single time when normal, I guess, racing drivers who've taken the normal route are probably more looser and loose cannons and sort of brake as late as you can. But no, for sure, I think talent also plays a part.
Now, you karted right up until fairly recently in the grand scheme of things, 2017, before jumping into single-seaters in 2018, where you were very, very busy competing in Euro Cup Formula Renault, British F3, which is hugely competitive, and the Castrol Toyota Racing Series. I suppose this is the year you got your first meaty single-seater experience under your belt. How do you look back at that time?
It was a big learning year, put it that way. Because obviously you're stepping in from karts. Karts was a lot of fun. Like, as a racer, whenever you look back at your career, I think karting is probably the one that you remember the most fondly, because it's just, I remember being stressed on the grid sometimes in karting, and now I'm thinking, why the fuck was I stressed, mate? It's like, it's the most chilled out racing you can do. But no, I think in the end, it was a big learning year, because I was prepared for a few championships that I did. I really struggled with the Formula Renault car. I don't know why. It's kind of got me the similar feeling to this year in F2, where I've been struggling quite a bit to get on tops of it. But I had a difficult year in Renault. In F3, I was a bit too hot-headed because I managed to pole it on my first outing. And then I was like, pretty much crashed the first race after a shit start, which set up the season.
Got head loss.
But Toyota, the TRS in New Zealand was definitely the highlight of the year, because that was crazy in the sense that you have five races on the bounce. You get to see all of New Zealand. And at the same time, The New Zealanders are a good bunch to party with. Yes. And obviously when you're 16, 17... still on the side, but you want to enjoy your evenings with your fellow drivers who all tended to be older than me. So it was a big learning experience.
I feel like there's something in the water in New Zealand, because I like, considering the size of the country, they've produced so many like F1 drivers, and I mean you've got Liam and Marcus in F2 now as well, and obviously the Toyota Racing Series is such a kind of well-respected championship. Like, what was that? So did you kind of start in Auckland and then go down to Wellington and around? Like, how exactly did that play out? Because I love it. It's a beautiful place.
So we went to... So the first round was in Christchurch. So I landed in Auckland. I had a very good experience because I ended up... the trip down there was 28 hours, right? It's a pretty long time. So
yeah, it's tough,
I ended up getting... In the second flight, after 6 hours, I was extremely bored, looked at the screen and I saw 14 hours to go, and I was like, okay, this is gonna be fucking boring. I've run out of movies to watch. I don't know what I'm gonna do. So I went to the back of the plane, asked for a couple of gin and tonics, and I was like, I need to sleep. So ended up getting those, and obviously with the altitude you do get a bit tipsy quicker, and managed to literally sleep it out. And when I landed, no troubles with the time zones or anything. Like, I was back ready to go. It was New Year's Eve as well, so I was there on point.
Happy days.
And so I was in Auckland for a couple of days, then went down to Christchurch for the first round. And then through what was the second round? Was it Invercargill, I think? Yeah, so through Christchurch to Queenstown, then down to Invercargill right at the bottom.
Nice, yeah.
And then pretty much North Island. We started in Taupo.
Oh, stunning.
And then Mansfield, I think, for the last round. I might have forgotten one, but I can't remember where it was. But it was dope.
It's a great country.
It's beautiful. If you could lasso New Zealand and bring it over to Europe, I'd 100% live there. Like, I remember, I've been there a few times because my brother lives there, and you can just drive around these, very normal roads, turn a corner, and there's like a 100-meter waterfall that no one cares about because they're everywhere, and it's just an incredible place. I did a bungee jump in New Zealand. You know, the in Queenstown, they've got that Nevis one, which is like, it's a 320-meter bungee. and it's got like a 6 or 7 second free fall. But when you're actually free falling that long, you're like, this is never going to end. I was like, I'm dead. This is it. Life's been great.
I'd rather die than even try that, to be honest, mate. No thanks.
You wouldn't do it.
I didn't have the courage to do it. I did end up
I'm with you, Clem.
Didn't have the cojones. Clem, you drive a racing car at 200 miles an hour. What do you mean you can't just throw yourself off a little cable car in between a couple of mountains?
See, I didn't like the bungee jump because the thing is, at least when you're skydiving, you've got two parachutes. When you bungee jump, you've only got one elastic band, and if that thing snaps, you're a bit screwed.
That's a good point.
That's a good point. Now, listen, you had your big break, I suppose, 2019, when you won the British F3 champs, dominated in a way. I think you won it with a race to spare, 24 rounds, including a round at Spa. Well done. Little round of applause. Was the championship win something that you had your eyes set on that year? Because you've still not been in, at this point, single-seaters for very long. Was it expected? Were you surprised with your success that year?
I don't like setting myself goals. I know that Trevor Carlin does. So for me, I was pretty relaxed in the sense that I came into the season and everything was rather relaxed and I was just trying to do my best. On the other hand, I know the team were put under a lot of pressure because pretty much Trevor said, look, if you don't win the championship, the season's shit to the team. So the team were very stressed. I was quite okay. But in the end, I wouldn't say I was surprised because I knew I think I had the speed from the year before with a couple of flashes, like with pole, a couple of podiums as well. So I was like, you know, I think I can do this. But at the same time, comes first race and you're on pole and you win the first race and so on, then you start to think about things and put everything into perspective and say, I think, look, if every weekend goes well, I think I've got the pace to win. So then it sort of became a target, I guess, from mid-season onwards, where I just needed to be, you know, extremely consistent, score points every weekend and try and get the championship, which we ended up doing, which was great.
A very quick interruption to remind you to check out our sponsors, Motus One, the event transportation company. Motus One is the industry leader in complex transport management from hospitality, talent, production crews, VIPs, and artist transport. Motus One's team have got you covered. They've also launched their leading-edge cloud-based event transportation management system called Motus Ride. Now you can manage your entire event transport program digitally. Make bookings, allocate rides, create approval processes, see reports, track costs, loads more. Head over to motus1.com and hear how they can support your event transportation needs. Back to the show.
Because I think there's a broader kind of question, not just for racing drivers, but for athletes in general. It's like, how do you get the best out of them? And I think from your perspective, do you know what approach works best for you, if you know what I mean? So for example, like some team bosses a bit more arm round, like supportive, a bit more like others can be a bit more like put pressure on and maybe like call you out if performances aren't going your way. Like, what do you think gets the best out of you?
I mean, I think it depends because sometimes it's good to get a slap, or at least for me, not a slap in the literal sense, but if you know what I mean, to sort of get slapped across the face and say, what the
come on, Clem, pull your finger out, son. Yeah,
literally, pretty much. Sometimes it's good to get an arm around as well. I think that's where a lot of drivers and a lot of coaches have become much better recently in racing, especially in the sense that, not going to say they're psychologists, but they understand how we feel.
Yeah.
And it plays a big part in your performance as well, because you need to be confident, you need to be good in your head to be able to get a good result. And some coaches are fairly old school in the sense where they go, you know, that was a shit job, and that's pretty much all they're going to tell you all day. Mm. Or they're going to be a bit more dive into the details, take care, but at the same time tell you did a shit job, which is, I think, I'm sort of in that in between.
Yeah. What's Trevor like in that regard? Because we had him on the show a few months ago and he came across as quite a sort of gentle, calm bloke. And he's obviously had huge success with Carlin. I mean, that team outside of Formula One is probably the biggest race team on the planet outside of, you know, those top Formula One teams. And he had this sort of very calm demeanor about him. He's obviously brought through so many world champions. what's his style like on a day-to-day basis?
I mean, for me, he's always been very, very calm. Same as, I guess, he came across to you guys. He's, I think he's very demanding in terms of what he expects from the team. Because obviously, first, they represent his name. He wants results. And he knows that, obviously, racing being a motorsport, there's not just the driver side, it's also mechanical. So he does ask for the most from the team. And I think that's where he's he puts, I think, a lot more pressure on. I think he understands that drivers sometimes need to be coached, but also sometimes need to be left alone. And so he's quite calm in the sense that he understands that a lot of drivers end up having their entourage already. So him being the team manager, he's more there to put an arm around you when something goes wrong and tell you to push the gas when you need to push the gas, really. So now he's a top guy, really, really nice guy. And to be honest, I think being in his team and learning from all the people that he has around him and in the team ended up making me better than probably elsewhere.
Yeah, because do you think that, you know, from your point of view, do you like to get into the details with the team, or do you kind of just kind of allow them to lead? Because I imagine certain drivers, we know in F1, like Michael Schumacher, Sebastian Vettel, these drivers were like always wanting to go through everything on like a fine tooth comb. Like, where do you sit on that, I guess, spectrum? Are you really into the details from a kind of a mechanical, technical point of view?
Well, I see it as I'm here to feel what's in the car. So in the end, I give my feedback. I try and be as clear and detail and concise with it. And when some of the decisions are being taken to change something on the car, I'd like to be involved in trying to understand and at least hear what they're talking about and see what I feel is going to be the best. On the other hand, I'm not an engineer and I'm not paid there to engineer the car. So in the end, I know that they're better at their job than I am, especially with my experience. I mean, when you mentioned Sebastian Vettel and Michael Schumacher, they have, I don't know how many years in F1's experience. So, of course, they're going to be the guys looking on top of everything and make sure that everything works right, especially being in a team that's been world champion. I'm pretty sure you understand the difference then between what's going to get you there and what isn't. But I think for me, I'm once again sort of like in between. I like to be involved. I know that it also motivates the team to be around them quite a lot and to push them for those results. But at the same time, it's important to let them do their job, because I'm pretty sure if they just gave me a blank piece of paper and told me set up the car, I would do it.
and are you a driver who is calm when you're driving? Like, are you one of those that gets on the radio? It's like, you bastards, that strategy was a load of shit. What are you doing to me? Or are you that kind of driver, or are you that kind of like, I'm going to work with the team here. I get it, guys. You know, we win together, we lose together. You know, Lewis Hamilton style. What's your way?
It depends how frustrated the thing that happened was. I mean, in the end, if it's like, the thing is, if we make a mistake as a team and we like say it's strategy, most of the time we've discussed it beforehand. So if it's a mistake that we all did together, I'm fairly relaxed. If it's something that we couldn't see happening, I'm also quite relaxed. But if it's something really stupid, then I'll get very frustrated.
If it's a Ferrari level strategy call.
Yeah, exactly. See, I would never pay for one of those blokes to be on my pit while doing my strategy.
Oh, bless them. Yeah, they're not having the best of time, are they? Now, you stepped up to full F3 in 2020. You finished 12th in that rookie season, which is admirable, really, for your first run at it. The following year, 2021, you finished in third. There's obviously a bit of a pattern here to your progress, a sort of learning year followed by really going for it and being at the sharp end. Now, you went into MP Motorsport with a couple of races in F2, and then followed by starting your first full season. How do you see your progress now, and what are your aspirations for next season?
To be honest, it's been hard. It's not been easy. I think that when you enter a car which is not really suited to you, not in the sense that the MP car, I mean the F2 car, where it's a heavy car, it's very sensitive to inputs and so on. It's not the easiest thing to get my head around at the moment. And obviously when you're lacking testing, because there's so few days and you only get 40 minutes before quali, it can be a bit of a pain in the ass going into quali, not really expecting and knowing what to expect, especially with the tire gap as well, going from mediums or hards during practice to softs. Because there's already a second of track improvement, and then there's another second and a half in the tires. So when you improve 2 seconds from one.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
One session to the next, you're not driving the same fucking car. It's a different car. So it's been hard in that sense for qualifying. I think on race pace is where we've made the most improvement, because in the end, it's sort of a bit of an annoying regular occurrence at the moment. But qualifying sort of down in P14 to P16, P17, and then always coming back in the points on Sunday with the strategy and the race pace. So I guess the race pace has been one of the strongest this year, but it's just a case of keeping my head down and trying to nail qualifying. Because I think that once that's sorted out, we can score points regularly. Obviously, the reverse grid and reverse top 10 sort of helps you out. Because, I mean, when you look at it in the grand scheme of things, I put my hands together for someone like Enzo Fittipaldi. Mm. The guy's not been qualifying super, super well, but he's always been in the top 10. And I think he's probably been the most consistent driver on that grid. And in the scoring left, right, and center, the guy's P4 in the championship, but yeah, he hasn't, you know, won a race or been incredibly fast like some of the guys you'd see up front when you think Porsche, Drugovic, or even Logan. So, yeah, I think unfortunately we haven't got the qualifying pace yet, or I haven't, but that's where I'm putting all my hard work.
Yeah, for sure. Good. Yeah, Enzo's been killing it this year. I've been super impressed, like kind of out of nowhere as well. But obviously, you've got Felipe as a teammate who's leading the championship at the moment. And has it helped you having it? Because what is his third year in F2, isn't it? And his second year at MP. So obviously, with his experience working with that team as well, inevitably that's going to, you know, that trickle down and working with a teammate with that much experience must help you out a lot, surely.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think that firstly, he's extremely well embedded in the team, because in the end, he did his first year there, coming off a particularly hard year with Carlin in F3, and sort of delivered straight away. Now, at the same time, I love the guy. He's super, super nice. One of the nicest people in the paddock that I'd probably get along the most with, because in the end, he hasn't got that sort of, how could you say, sort of selfish approach to racing, where you sort of try and keep your own, stuff.
Yeah, you've got an agenda. Yeah.
If I have a question to ask, he'll be the first one to answer and say
nice something. Yeah.
So it's really useful having someone as well with so much experience, because I think he knows what he knows what he's doing. He's leading the championship, so he's definitely got a clue. And now he's on top of things, and it's good to have that. It can be hard as well, because obviously when you're struggling and you've got your teammate always in the top four in quali or something like this, for sure mentally it can be quite draining. And sometimes you're just like, why couldn't I put it together? Like, what's the difference between me and him? Like, but at the same time, it's useful because you just get the best data that you can ask for. You get the best feedback. You know how he's talking to the engineers and so on. So at the same time, it can be quite draining, but at the same time, I'm very thankful for it because I know that down the line, it will help me out. So yeah. I guess it's a good experience.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. You're going to learn more from, I think this is, you know, the things that are difficult, you're struggling with at the moment, you'll look back fondly on, because you'll be like, you learn more from the mistakes, the things that don't go well than if you just win all the time. That's boring as well, surely.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? I pick winning all the time over having some hard times. But
well, I mean, he's like, to Tomo's point, he's been there longer. I mean, going back to your pattern, you have your learning year. I mean, people can't be expected to hit the ground running immediately in a new championship, particularly with such a different car. And you mentioned the car is a big, heavy car. What else did you notice in that step up from F3 to F2? Is it a big gap, or did you get in there? I know, you know, you said you're struggling with the car a little bit at the moment, but did you feel kind of comfortable and yes, this is familiar and the brakes are not too far away from what I'm used to, the acceleration and the top speed, or is there a bigger gap than people may realize?
No, I think in the end it's fairly similar, because you step up from F3 to F2, you get carbon brakes, so much better performance. So in the end, a lot of the things that I used to do in F3 in terms of brake points and speeds themselves, because you're so low to the ground and you see so far away from the car that you don't actually realize how quickly you're really going. In the end, it's not been the hardest transition in terms of feeling of like driving, let's say, like the driving in itself. I think the key thing is that in an F3 car, you can be fairly consistent and make, I wouldn't say tiny little mistakes, but tiny differences in terms of the driving, like say brake pressure on your release. You could be 3-4 bars, or which is the equivalent of like 2-3 kilos different. And it wouldn't make a huge change because the car in itself is so light that the weight transfers don't affect it so much. But the moment you step into an F2 car and it's another 150 kilos on top, you feel it because the car naturally moves more and the weight transfer ends up being, let's say, more, it affects the car a lot more. So you have to be extremely consistent. And I think that's probably one of the areas where I've had the most struggle, is to be literally doing the same bloody brake shape every time. And the worst thing, when I come in from a practice session or a quali and I look at my corner and I look at Felipe's and I see, look, there's a 10th there. And you're looking at the brake shape from far away and you're like, it's the fucking same. And then you zoom in and you see that there's 2 bars difference at this point, and that allows him not to lock the front wheel when I sort of have a micro lock. So the car doesn't rotate and he gets a better exit. I'm just like, what the fuck? How do you expect me to figure this out whilst I'm driving around? Like,
that's what kind of blows my mind, is that there's all these finite differences, yet you're sitting in a car that's vibrating, shaking. It's like, how, I don't credit to you. Like, I don't know how you do it. Cause the level of, like, I get it in a simulator because nothing's moving, but you're in a car that's shaking, vibrating in real life with real G-force, yet you're expected to manage these brake pressures by just, I don't get it, man. You look crazy.
I don't. And it's so frustrating because, I've experienced it to a tiny, tiny, tiny degree at karting.
Oh, here we go.
Tom, you do a bit of karting every now and again. You know what it's like, and you've karted with some good people. So like, I followed Max Chilton around a go-kart track once. And Max, by his own admission, he's never going to be world champion, but he's still a top, top quality driver. So I was following him. I was following his lines. I felt like I was braking in exactly the same place. And he just disappeared. I'm like, what am I doing wrong? I put it down to weight because I'm heavier than him, obviously. But I was literally studying what he was doing and he just disappeared. Like there's things that you guys do that I just cannot wrap my head around. It's extraordinary. Anyway, let's talk about the future. So next year, presumably another season of F2. The long-term plan, let's cut to the chase. It's got to be Formula One, isn't it?
Every driver's going to tell you that. You ask any driver in the sort of single seater like Formula One ladder, they're all going to tell you F1. I'm more of a, how do you call it, a realistic guy, in the sense that I know that there's only 20 seats, and that nowadays you don't only need talent, you need luck, you need money, you need a whole bunch of things behind you to sort of get you there. So, yes, that's my goal in the sense, but I'm also open to doing something else because I know that endurance at the moment is becoming massive again.
Yeah,
loads of manufacturers going in. Formula E is good in the sense that I don't think that the car is extremely quick still. It's not bad, actually. When you look at it around the Monaco track, it's sort of similar to the Formula Renault sort of times.
Yeah.
When you think the car's electric, it's not terrible, especially since it's running on road tires, which is something I'd like changed. But,
not alone.
But in the end, I think that overall, there's loads of opportunities out there, even IndyCar. Yeah. So, yes, Formula One is my target. But put it this way, I wouldn't be one of those drivers that spends an endless amount of time in Formula 2 to try and get that F1 seat at some point, knowing that, man, there's so much more stuff that you can do in racing. As long as I race, I'm happy, if you know what I mean.
Sure, yeah.
The one's probably the bollocks and it's fucking fast round corners and you love it. But I think I also quite like the challenge of working with three other drivers in endurance, for example, because you're not just there driving yourself. You're having to set up the car for three blokes, making compromises and so on. So I would say that probably endurance would be my second pick behind that.
Okay, interesting. Because I think, as long as, I know, for example, like the Red Bull Academy gets a lot of stick, but at the end of the day, they've supported so many young drivers to have careers in motorsport. And I think beyond F1, just because you don't get to F1, like there's plenty, like it's like saying, oh, well, if you're not a, you know, if you're a footballer and don't play for your country, then like you've not made it. It's like, that's a load of bollocks. Like there's so many different ways. I was chatting to her at Miami, actually. I was chatting to Tatiana Calderon and she was saying about how the IndyCars, they're like, it's such a visceral, much more raw experience than typically you get in Europe. And obviously Callum's gone over there, Christian Lingard as well. So I think Indy would be, because I think as well, as the profile of F1 grows, I think all motorsport benefits for that.
Yeah.
And like you say about endurance racing with Ferrari jumping in now, we've got Peugeot, we've got loads more works entries. I think it's a really exciting time to be a young racing driver, mate. I think there's going to be even more. Like we have this conversation again in 5 years, there's going to be even more opportunities.
Yeah.
Mate, I've seen the change because in the end, I'm not... Netflix, you know, I like watching Netflix. And I have to say that Netflix has changed motorsport in the sense. Because there's a load of things that happen around F1 that sort of made it grow. But the biggest thing was the audience on Netflix because people realized, holy shit, that's actually quite interesting.
Yeah.
Because you ask someone to watch a race, they're going to stand in front of the screen for an hour. Like a complete, like someone who's never watched racing before. And they're just going to be like, what the fuck's going on? Like you end up just seeing cars go around. Unless you tell them, look, on the side, that's the leaderboard and they're on softs and he's on hards. And so that's the difference in grip and so on. You just put a guy in front of the screen, they're going to be like, well, what's going on? I have no understanding whatsoever. So the fact that that series sort of helped explain Formula One at the same time as being behind the scenes and knowing the personalities of the drivers, man, it grew so much. Like 5 years ago, I walk into a restaurant or a bar and I say, hi, I'm a racing driver. People be like, cool, mate.
Crack on.
the interest has gone through the roof. I mean, you see it all the time now. Like you say, you walk into a pub or something and have a chat with some random and suddenly Formula One is a topic of conversation. People want to talk about it. I'm definitely noticing that more. And
100%.
You know, Tomo mentioned the revamped interest in things like WEC and IndyCar. Like IndyCar seems like it's going through a bit of a resurgence. I'm a massive IndyCar fan. And WEC, with these cars, like that Peugeot that you mentioned, these hypercars look so cool. I mean, they're incredible machines. And that's a very good championship to place yourself in. So all very good options. Let's talk a little bit more about Formula One. We're on the summer shutdown as at the time of recording now. So all the teams have buggered off on their lovely 3 week holiday and recoup and R&R before the second half of the season. What do you expect from the rest of this year with Mercedes finishing quite strong, Lewis Hamilton seemingly getting to grips with his car? What do you think is going to happen for the remainder of this F1 season?
I think in that sense, I think I don't know if they can win, you see, because I think that the gap is still extremely big between Merck and the rest. I mean Ferrari and Red Bull. I think they are extremely strong, and if they can come back, if Leclerc and Verstappen crash, for example, I would put Lewis as the next guy to be to win the race. Mm-hmm. And I hope for him, because it'd be quite cool to keep that record of winning every single year that he's been in F1. But, man, I'm not like, I wouldn't say I'm either a massive Verstappen fan or a massive Leclerc fan. I like them both. But if that Ferrari pit wall doesn't sort it out,
disaster.
I think it's going to go Red Bull's way.
Yeah, it feels like it's a. This is the first, but it's 80 points now between Max and Charles, and you just feel like it's probably gotten away from them. But also, like as a racing driver yourself, like do you find it? And obviously, you're on the F2 cards, so you're following the kind of circus around. Like, is it how easy is it for you to follow the Formula One results when you know you're there that weekend? You've got you're working, you know, on a lot of these weekends. So do you still find it kind of easy to keep up with what's going on?
In the end, you don't really care so much as so for the F1, because you're sort of there doing your own thing. So normally on Saturday, we have our race right after the qualifying. So in that sense, you're getting prepared and so on. And say you're done all your preparation and so on. You're just trying to relax for the last half an hour before stepping into the car. You can watch quali. You watch Q3, but man, for the race, I'm out. Yeah, like, yeah. I need to get out before the traffic starts. Because, man, after a Formula One race, I have never been to a traffic. I love Paul Ricard, right?
Oh, the traffic.
The logistics there are so fucking bad, man. Yeah. On Saturday night, after my race, which was just post-qualifying, what is normally a half an hour drive down into Toulon to my hotel took me an hour and 45 minutes.
Yeah.
I wanted to shoot myself as I got to the hotel lobby.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm going to have a nice dinner at the hotel right by the harbor, enjoy like a nice meal, go to bed early. Man, I finished my meal at 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
No, it's a disaster. The logistics around that race are horrible, and it doesn't seem to get any better. Yeah, no, year after year, it doesn't get any better.
But they haven't done a Silverstone where they've literally built a motorway to the track.
Yeah.
That's what they probably should do, but
yeah.
I don't know if it's going to stay on the calendar, but it would be something that they should consider because it was awful.
Yeah. I mean, so many are. I remember the first year, showing my age, the first year in Abu Dhabi, 2009, I was living out there. I was part of the setup of that racetrack, and the traffic there was horrendous, way worse than France. But it does improve over time. But Paul Ricard doesn't seem to change. It's a bit like Tomo was in Miami, as I was, and there it was pretty chaotic as well. Like the whole logistics around that circuit. It was bad. It was a bad experience being at that racetrack.
It's a circuit on a car park. So how do you expect to have that many parking places if you've literally used them all?
Yeah. I've got an idea. Let's build a racetrack in a car park.
They should have built an extra level above the whole track. So yeah, literally park above.
Multi-story. Yeah, makes perfect sense.
I actually, there was one question I wanted to ask Clem, and it's kind of related to what we talked about, but. In terms of the profile of the sport growing, and obviously you've gone, you know, through the junior categories, you're in Formula 2 now, you know, your name's more known. How have you, and I've always wanted to ask this question to kind of a young racing driver, it's like, how have you been prepared for the exposure? Obviously you've got, you know, significant following on social media now, people know your name, you more like to get recognised. Just as a human, as a person, how have you found that? Have you found that difficult to kind of get on top of or manage, or has it been gradual enough, I guess, for you to kind of, you know, fall into it nicely? You know what I mean?
I haven't really felt that big of a change, because in the end, I'm not one to focus on those things so much. Like, you talk about social media, I'm not going to lie to you, I have someone do it for me because I fucking hate it. Like, I hate my phone. I don't, I'm not really on my phone that much.
I knew you didn't do your own social media, because I looked at your Instagram yesterday and it's very curated. Like, it's lots of pretty pictures of you in a race car walking down the paddock. I was like, there's no pictures of Clem playing golf.
The brand.
Yeah.
It's the brand.
Yeah.
No, yeah. So in the end, I do see a change sometimes, in the sense that people who, you know, you might not think about, for example, in the F1 paddock, you're walking down the F1 paddock and you meet someone that you've never met before, and you expect them to be like quite a big person in the sport, say like a team manager of an F1 team or so on. And you tell them your name and they're just like, oh yeah, I know. It's sort of like, I guess that's pretty cool in that sense. Yeah. But at the same time, I'm just myself in general. So I don't really change my approach to when I do an interview or anything else. So even meeting fans, I just, you know, if I go to the pub and meet some bloke and I'm having a pint, I'll speak the same way to that guy that some guy asked for my autograph.
Yeah, that's good. So. Yeah, don't ever change that, because it's you get these media trained drivers who are just so dry, and even on a podcast, and we've had it with certain people where a podcast should be a place where you can relax and talk about what you want and act how you want, because there's no legislation, there's no restrictions, but people still are so highly media trained that they just won't open up.
That's what it's like me and Marcus Armstrong, we started our own thing where we bring in drivers.
Yes.
We sort of tell them, basically it was meant to be about food, but it's kind of just a chat shit podcast where you're just like, there's very little talking about, there is some talking about racing, but it's mostly fails and bloopers rather than your actual wins and so on.
Yeah.
And then we end up just talking about what happened on our last night out, or stuff like that. It's one of the behind the scenes stuff, which is interesting.
Yeah.
But that's I think that's what gets the most out of Screaming Meals, isn't it? I was watching some of it yesterday, actually. And I think, you know, I don't know, like, media trading's all well and good, and I'm sure we've all heard the PR63 memes around George. But at the end of the day, I just think when you're real and, you know, you put yourself out there and you're talking to very open, like, I think that's what, you know, I think that's what the people want to see. I think that makes, you know, drivers more relatable, because we, you know, we're all guilty of putting athletes and people we watch on TV on like a pedestal as these, but actually, like, we're all just human beings. We're all just doing our thing, and we're all just like, it just happens to be that your job is something that's on telly.
You wouldn't believe the experience I had when I, like, so I was in Barcelona last year and our first race, I think, for the sprint race or the reverse grid, was right after F1 quali, and Lewis pulled it. And I'm sort of, normally you drive to the pit lane, but this time they were just pushing the cars and I was just walking along the grid or the paddock or the pit lane. And the F1 cars were still there and they were doing their post quali celebrations and everything. And I'm sort of seeing a few drivers and so on, a few that I know, you know, like the Leclercs and all of that. We've grown up with these guys. They were in the paddock when we were young, so it's nothing special to see them. But I'd never seen Lewis Hamilton, and I was like, bro, this guy is God. Like, he is God as a racing driver. And I walked past him, and I was like, he's just a normal bloke.
Yeah.
He looks the same as me. He's about my height, you know? He's nothing like... Firstly, yep. I thought he was much taller than he is. And then, I sort of walked past him, and I was listening to his conversation with his engineer, and I was like, bro, he's literally chatting exactly the same thing as me. I was like, bro, it's no different. Like, in the end, those guys, they are put on a pedestal. And as well, at the same time, by just looking at them on TV, say you have never gone to a race, but you're a massive fan, you probably think of them as like, you know, they walk in the paddock and it's just like there's like a rainbow behind them, and they've got some halo above their head.
They do carry an aura, though. I think, like, people like Lewis and, you know, other, like Nico Rosberg, and others like that, when you meet them, they do have this, like, you have this kind of like, whoa,
but that's because you know who they are. That's because to you, that's the significance to you. But there could be someone who's never watched F1 before, has never heard of Lewis Hamilton, and is just a bloke.
And he is just a bloke, but he's, you know, he is just a normal guy. But I guess he's you know, one-to-one, he's going to be a little bit standoffish, probably, because I expect he's had a lot of experience of people trying to, you know, befriend him purely because he's, you know, a legend in racing. Absolutely. And he's got, you know, millions and millions of pounds in the bank. So he's going to be a little bit awkward. And when I met him, it was in a work capacity, and you could tell he's a bit standoffish. And also, it was for a sponsor, so he didn't want to be there. So he was clearly, you know, like, let's just get this over with and let me go home. No, we're quickly running out of time, Clem. So we're going to come on to our final three questions, which we ask all of our guests. And these are brought to us by our current sponsors at Motus One. Go and check them out, motus1.com. I'll kick off this week. What's got you excited at this very moment? Doesn't need to be racing related. It could be absolutely anything.
Premier League starting this afternoon.
Yes, it is.
Pretty damn exciting.
Do you support? Come on.
I don't know if I like this, but I'm a big Chelsea fan.
Yes!
Bro, why?
Yes!
Why am I outnumbered, man? What is this?
So am I. Good man. That's what we like.
Oh, what's going on with, is it Cucurella from Brighton? Is that through yet? Or
he's done his medical. Well, he's doing his medical, I think, today, so it should be done deal. Should be.
Okay. There's a kind of whiffs of Oscar Piastri in terms of the statement Brighton put out. I don't know if you saw it. They were like denying the Fabrizio Romano tweet around it. They were like, no, this is like, it's nothing's happened, fake news.
I was like, Fabrizio's normally on it, but yeah, they might have done it off the Astro.
I think it will go through eventually. It looks like it. Brighton just wanted some clicks on Twitter, I think.
Have you got your fantasy team sorted? I got mine done yesterday.
I have not. No, I don't take enough time. I don't have enough time to do that stuff. Anyways, I mean, I love football. I watch it all the time, but I don't think I'd be a great manager. So
fantasy stresses me out, man. It makes me like I'm ended up like supporting Tottenham players. Like, I'm a West Ham fan. And I'm like wanting. I'm like, exactly. What am I doing? Why do I want Harry Kane to score just because of a stupid internet game?
Our second question, Tommy, I'm going to come to you on this one if you've got it to hand.
Go on then. Right, Clem, what does success mean to you, mate? Success.
Success? Well, it can mean a wide range of things. I mean, in terms of results, it's being the best and doing your best. I think more doing your best than actually being the best. You can be successful without actually being the best at what you do, as long as you've done your best and you've maximized everything. But I think success in life is being able to do what you love. Brilliant. I think that's the most Amen. Important, because in the end, you never end up working a day in your life, which is sounds like success to me.
Look at Amen. You. There's a Amen. Philosophical brain in there, I'm telling you. Our final question for you, what are you scared of?
Chelsea's upcoming season.
It's going to be fine. Good. Don't be scared.
Be afraid.
No. What am I actually scared of? Snakes.
I don't mind snakes. Don't mind snakes.
Interesting.
You couldn't hold a snake then?
No way.
No?
I couldn't even get close. I'm just in the zoo whenever it says like sort of snakes bit.
Okay.
I'd never go there.
I don't mind it. What did
Bruv, you're asking to be pranked in the paddock with like a fake snake now, putting that out there, just saying.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. It's probably going
to
happen.
No, I'm not. What was yours, Tomo, when you came on as a guest?
Cockroaches, man. I can't like just the thought. I saw one in a bee for like a few years ago and it was massive. It was the size of like my hand and I almost shat myself. It was honestly, like, I'll never forget that.
And they're indestructible, which makes them even more terrifying.
That makes it more terrifying. They can survive like nuclear radiation or something. Like, that's crazy, man.
Can they actually?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, like, they're mad.
It's insane. Anyway, enough cockroach chat. Clem, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. It's been long overdue. I know I've been trying to get you on for a little while and diaries keep colliding, but we've finally done it. Thanks so much for joining us. Best of luck for the rest of this year, for your future. Hopefully we'll see you in a Formula One car or WEC or IndyCar in the not too distant future. But for now, Clem Novalak, thank you for joining us on the Motormouth podcast.
Thank you for having me, guys.
Thanks everyone for listening to the podcast. Before you leave us, one final reminder to check out the guys and girls at Motors One, your new transportation solution for minor, mega and signature events anywhere in the world. Motors One simplifies the complex process of event transportation and provides clients with unrivaled service and support to ensure your event transportation needs are fulfilled. Check them out today at motorsone.com. And if you tell them you found them through the Motormouth podcast, you'll get up to 20% off your first booking.
Thank you so much for listening to the Motormouth podcast. Do make sure you give us a follow on our socials, Twitter at Motormouth _, Instagram at Motormouth _ official, and Facebook, just search Motormouth. You can also download the Motormouth app, where you can get exclusive video content from MMTV, create your own social profile to interact with other fans, and check up on all the latest happenings with whatever motorsport takes your fancy. We're also proud to be supporting the Brain Tumor Charity too, so make sure you check the links in the podcast description to find out how you can help cure brain tumors quicker. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and review. And until next time, you've been listening to the Motormouth podcast.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.